You can clap again if you want. It's okay. And be kind to me. I'm wearing a flower tonight, so please be kind to me. my friends back in Brooklyn will see this. I'll be barred from Brooklyn forever. my name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous and to be a recovered member of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. First things first, to thank the committee and John for having me here this weekend and share with you guys tonight. I've learned by doing this often, what simply happened is your spirit through group consciousness has extended an invitation to my spirit. And we commence shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey. I suit up and show for fun and for free, and we commence shoulder to shoulder, and we experience the greatness of Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to experience the energy that's in these conferences, because what we're truly experiencing in essence is God, who brought us here and allows us to walk shoulder to shoulder. Most of you guys have been really, really kind to me on the way in, and I want to thank you, but you haven't heard me speak yet, so we'll see how it is on the way out. A lot of guys, I'll take you to the airport. You didn't hear me speak yet. Let's see by the end of the night how that goes. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and if I didn't say that, it would be falsely humble. I'm a recovered alcoholic. God in his infinite mercy brought me from a place of bondage of self in the throes of addiction, in the throes of alcoholism, into Alcoholics Anonymous, and through his mercy and the guidance of the 12 steps, I get to experience getting recovered, no longer suffering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and for that I'm truly grateful. I'm not a recovering alcoholic, experiencing the sprees and untreated alcoholism while I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and sober. I'm a recovered alcoholic. God brought me to this place where after I was separated from alcohol, I get to get free of alcoholism. Because a drink has been removed from me and I'm not drinking, it doesn't mean I'm getting well. You know, you sober up a horse thief, you have a sober horse thief. And so going through the 12 proposals in a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to get to experience getting recovered. And that's what I'd like to talk a little bit about tonight. How Alcoholics Anonymous, how we ought to be a pep rally for the power of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And not keeping God in the back waiting for others to find it, but shouting from the rooftops about what God can do for us in Alcoholics Anonymous. How we get reborn and resurrected in a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if anything like me, I came in here with absolutely nothing. Broken, leveled. Homeless, unemployable, dying of untreated alcoholism, and I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and little by slowly, God puts me back together through you. And I stand here tonight with dignity, sober, recovered. That's great news. That's great news for me and anyone who knew me. That's great news for me and all my prospects. And what great news we can shout to a newcomer who's here tonight or someone who's been around here for a while still experiencing untreated alcoholism that we not only never have to pick up a drink again, but we can get free, we can get recovered, experience the glory of God, and there's one word for that, and that's called bliss. Ain't that great news for someone who's suffering from alcoholism, what we can offer? And yet we settle so many times in our middle of the road meetings for just put the plug in a jug and don't drink and go to meetings. And so many of us are dying in Alcoholics Anonymous wondering, where do I go now? I'm making meetings. They told me put the plug in a jug. They told me make 90 meetings in 90 days. They told me just don't drink and go to meetings. And all I keep doing is getting loaded. Where do I go now? I was one of them. I was going to meeting after meeting after meeting, getting drunk. I had a desire to stop, and I couldn't stop until I got completely leveled in 1988, and something was made new for me because God put a point to teachers in my path, and I haven't looked back since. A loving God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. My separation from... Thank you. My separation from alcohol was violent. It was ugly. It was horrific. I don't know if I'll ever survive that. It happened in the back of a filthy hallway in Lower Manhattan, where I just knew, I had this moment of clarity that I knew another drink I was going to die, and for the very first time in my life, I did not want that. Up until that point, I welcomed the idea. Like Bill says in his story, I welcomed the idea of dying. I don't want to do another day. I'm tired. But this one moment, I didn't want that. I reflected upon that in Alcoholics Anonymous, always thinking that the spiritual experience, the spiritual revolution began or begins when we sit down with the sponsor and go through the 12 steps. And for some of us, that's very true, but not for all of us. Because for me, my experience, my revolution, the spiritual revolution began in the back of this hallway. It was a roach-infested, filthy hallway, and I was lying in the back, and I remember making a plea to this God, if you're out there, please take me from this. I don't want to die. That was the mustard seed that was able to move a mountain. Because in that little bit of willingness, and circumstances presented its willingness to me, I made a plea, if you're out there, take me from this. And then little by slowly, God connected the dots. It was the first time in my life I didn't want to die, and I realized in Alcoholics Anonymous, that was really the beginning of my spiritual experience, because it made me open to be teachable for the first time, perhaps, in my entire life. And what happened from this hallway, I was placed in my seventh and, God willing, last treatment center. My Heavenly Father didn't need to show up in some decorative palace, didn't need to show up in some fancy Park Avenue meeting. One of his children made a sincere plea to him, and he shows up in the back of a hallway and interrupts my death and says, enough, I have other work for you to do. And in a sense, I grabbed God's hand and was placed in my seventh treatment center. And after about 10 days of being in there, they sent me out to Minnesota, which I owe my life to, a meeting called the Three Legacies meeting out there. And they presented me with the big book, and they said, you've tried every way to stop. You're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience is going to conquer. You've tried everything but this. Are you willing? Absolutely. Where do I sign up? And they disturbed me many times on the question of alcoholism. Sometimes in our middle of the road, contemporary AA was so worried about offending the newcomer. You know, oh, don't get them angry because they may not come back. If they're lucky, booze will kick them back. Don't talk about God to a newcomer. We don't know what's going to happen. Guess what? If I'm wheeled into an emergency room dying of a wound that's going to kill me, I don't want the doctor to come in and say, you're not ready. Hang in there for 90 days. This may hurt a little bit. Hurt. Fix me. But sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, we forget that we're dying of something that's going to kill us. It's called alcoholism. And why deny the newcomer the solution, which is God and the instructions to get there? If we study our big book, we look at A Vision for You, and they talk about Bill D. Bob and Bill go up there to pay a call on Bill Dotson. They weren't interested in Bill Dotson's feelings and his issues and his dysfunctional family. Had a tough day today. You know, did mommy leave home when you were 10? Listen, we all have our stuff. I don't want to make light of that. What Bill and Bob did was they talked to Bill Dotson about the mind. They talked to Bill Dotson about the body. They said we have a spiritual answer and the solution, how they got to it while the guy was laying in bed detoxing. That was the sense of urgency they approached the newcomer with. How many of my meetings do I walk into back home, and I get to do this a lot, I get to travel a lot, and we have our great pockets of enthusiasm, and then we have our meetings where we're dying in Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't worry about the fourth step. You don't need the big book. Stay away from those people with the big book, and don't worry about God. Just put the plug in a jug. And Joe gets drunk and dies, and we kick back and say, I guess he didn't want it enough. All right? We should be a pep rally for the power of God and what God can do for us in talking about that and nothing less than that great fact. We have a solution for you. You never have to pick up a drink again, and you can get free now. That's what we ought to be about in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what we do, right? Because of the work I've been able to get to do, coming from a hallway and seven treatment centers in my life, I've been brought to a place of going through the work over and over and over again. And what this work, where it has brought me to, is silence, presence, breath, now, no attachments, a life of invitation, a life of acceptance, a life of surrendering to what is, that allows me to experience a tremendous amount of freedom. What a great way to live. Rather than be attached to the time on the wall, the calendar on the wall, what she thinks of me, what they think of me, what did you think of me last week? You can think of me nice things next week. How about this conference? How about the next conference? What time is it? Got to get back. You know the internal dialogue we suffer from? You're driving down the highway. It's like 7 in the morning, you're on your way to work, and you already shot your boss 6 times, you didn't even get there yet. And if she complains when I get home, have I got news for her? That guy at the home group, him and his big book, if he starts tonight, I'm going to give it to him. You know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, we're going to work, and this is going on. We wake up with the internal dialogue, and it's going. And it doesn't stop till we go to sleep, and soon we wake up, come on, let's go, you're late. Right? What we get to experience, what I've gotten to experience, is so much less of that, and at times none of that, experiencing peace and presence and breath and no attachments to the external conditions. For the longest time, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was under the delusion that it was the external conditions that were a remedy for this internal illness called alcoholism. When she loves me, when I get the right job, I get enough money, when I get the right car, smoke expensive cigars, when everything on the external world looks good, then I'm going to feel spiritually fit. Remove one of those things from the equation, I'm down on my knees begging for help again. And I have found out the hard way in Alcoholics Anonymous that external conditions are not a remedy for what ails me. But the internal revolution is and always will be. That is called God. That's why I still seek this power with the desperation of a drowning man. That's why I work with others intensely. And God allows me to do that. I have a sponsor who works with the sponsor. What a good deal. What a good deal. I sobered up in Minnesota, but my separation took place in Brooklyn, New York, as if you couldn't tell by the way I speak, right? In fact, my dear friends Mike and Erica were in New York for a conference. So Mike was asking me about where he could visit. I says, forget where you're visiting. You have to get the right attitude to come to New York first. So what I told Mike is, don't pray, don't meditate, don't do any meeting, show up really untreated, and you'll blend right in. Then I was trying to, if anyone's seen a movie called Mickey Blue Eyes, and he's trying to teach this actor who's English how to say, how you doing? I was giving Mike, how you doing lessons on the phone. Because Mike, you need to not say to people, good morning, how are you? Because a lunacy commission will be appointed for you. You walk in very angry and say, how you doing? We speak in one word back home. How you doing? Going to a meeting. Everything's together. So Mike was saying, how are you doing? I said, this ain't going to work. Get angry, Mike. After 3 days, he called me and he says, hey, how you doing? I says, he made it. My first home group was called the Free Spirit Group, and back, this was in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, of all places, where God had me get sober, right? And the only requirement for membership there is a pinky ring, sunglasses, and gold jewelry. I mean, we had guys who changed how it works into how you doing. There were some people in my first home group who thought The Godfather was an educational movie, Yeah, and these are the gurus God put in my path to get sober. I'm like really desperate. Hey, how you doing? You want to get sober? baby. And I didn't have to tell you I'm recovered, man. To tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and how I'm trying to be today, living in all three sides of the triangle and not giving that lip service, I will come at you with experience tonight, not on opinions I don't have experience with. I will come at you with experience. And what I can offer also tonight is to, with this work that we get to do, whether it's recovery through the book, the service we get to do, the fellowshipping we get to do, is seek experience with all of those. Knowledge will work. It'll give me some relief. But the true liberation is an experience with this power called God, experiencing what we get to do. And I get to experience all three sides of the triangle, not living in one and expecting to experience the benefits of all three. So I will come at you with experience. My first dream came when I was about 14 years old. I grew up in Brooklyn. And I remember that very clearly, what my first drink was all about. Because up until my first drink, I was living all over page 52 in our big book. I was driven by 100 forms of fear. This was spring, summertime, and I remember about 6 months prior, my mom, who suffered from what we suffer from, alcoholism, it got the best of her. And after several attempts, she finally succeeded in taking her life. And my design for living was taken right out of my lap. I remember that day. I remember that morning. And I was never the same. My design for living was taken out of my lap, and I had no clue what to do with this life. I was incredibly angry with God because apparently he don't work anymore. In fact, I was one of those people on the way into AA. I would more than bristle with antagonism when you talk to me about God. If God was so loving and kind, and I might go to the external world and point out calamity, I worship other things, circumstances in my life. There is no God. You keep it. I don't want to know about it. I watched my mom get sick and sicker and suffer at the hands of booze and finally take her life. My life was never the same. I had a guy called Dad who's like cunning, baffling, and powerful. My dad's a tough guy, a street guy from downtown Brooklyn. My dad's the type of guy where his presence will show up 20 minutes before he actually gets there. And then there was me. So we didn't really meet on the same path. Our lives did not parallel each other at all. And my mom was kind of in the middle of that, trying to make this relationship happen. And when she died, I was left with this guy. And I was scared to death of him. And he would look at me, and I would shake in my shoes. And even with people, they'd ask me my name. I says, Peter won't work. Let me come up with a good name so they like me, because I was so attached to your opinion of me. And I was dying because of it. Because of where I live now, I no longer live like that. But back then, it was different. And this one summer night, there was a church feast happening. And my friends were hanging out just off the corner, and they were passing around a quart of Colt 45 beer. And they seemed to be joyous, happy, and free drinking beer, and I wanted what they had to offer. They were roughhousing and talking to the girls, and there was music in the background. This looks like a pretty neat deal. But what was holding me back was the fear of this guy called Dad, who had warned me many times that he didn't want to see me drinking on the corner, didn't want me hanging around those girls, didn't want me to become a product of my environment. And I would shake in my shoes when he would give me these very stern warnings until this one Saturday. And I don't know why till this moment, but I put my hand in there, I grabbed the quart, and I drank some Colt 45 beer. It hit my gut, and nothing happened. I thought my dad would drive up, the police would drive up, something evil was going to happen to me. Nothing. So I drank some more, and I drank some more, and I took a few more pops, and suddenly something happened to me that was indescribably wonderful. I got to a place out there that was absolutely terrific. I got to be taller and better looking. All the girls wanted me in the worst way by the end of the night. Why is that funny? Story of my life with women. I'm serious, and they laugh at me. Lord have mercy. Bill says in his story, I had arrived. And that night, as I drank and the beer was doing what it was supposed to do, and I felt really good about everything, my friends, my environment, who I was, the voices started to stop. The pain of losing my mom was removed. I wasn't thinking about Dad or getting arrested. I was present to the moment. Beer was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. What a good deal. And when Bill says I had arrived, I had arrived. I loved it. I loved all of it. Knowing I had not knowing I had stepped onto a road paved right to hell called alcoholism. Knew nothing about the obsession, the phenomenon called craving. My mind is always going to take me back to that which is killing me. My body gets a drink, and the drink craves more, never satisfied, only intensified. And who knew about a spiritual malady? I just knew I drank beer. I got to a place out there that was indescribably wonderful. I'll take more. What a good deal. And I went home that night and got up the next morning. No hangover, no blackouts. My teeth were still in my mouth. There were no soiled clothes. It was good, and I remembered everything. And on my way into the park to play basketball with the older guys, my shoulders were now this wide. I had my passage into manhood. I had a story. I had something. But beyond that, what I had was a panacea for my ills. I had something that I knew come next Saturday night, I can get out there and escape all of this. I can deal with this week. I found a solution. It's called beer. What a good deal. Booze, alcohol worked on me for a long time. It worked. It was not a problem for a long time. I couldn't see the problem with alcohol. I just knew when I drink, I go there, everything's good. And when I'm not drinking, I can cope till the next time. But I knew nothing about lack of power, choice, and control back then. See, I thought I was making choices to go drink. My body was demanding to go drink. My mind was going to take me back to a drink, regardless of whether I wanted to or not. Those are the three things that separate me from those moderate drinkers or those hard drinkers that we have in our glorious fellowship who can put the plug in a jug because they still have power, choice, and control. But when they sponsor someone like me who's a real alcoholic, people like me die. Knew nothing about that back then. And I remember the following Saturday rolled around and I drank and I got fired up and I got out there again. It was a little different, but I experienced that feeling again and I was on this path. What happened, progression started to work in my life and Saturday became Friday and Saturday and then Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And then I said, well, why do I have to wait for the weekend to get this going? Why can't we start on like Wednesday and then Wednesday and Thursday and Friday? And little by slowly, as Bill says in his story, there were many unhappy scenes in my home. See, my family didn't fear each other. I feared my dad. That was about it. My family felt safe to leave money and jewelry around the house. It's okay to leave this door open. We're home. And then what happened, I would come home drunk and dump a lot of earthy, ugly language on my two younger brothers, who always felt safe around me, their older brother, and now they didn't. They had no idea it was going to walk in the door. And then they would tell my dad, and my dad would corner me and give me the riot act the next morning about what I was doing with my life. And I would wait for him to be done. I really didn't care what he said anymore. My perceptions were starting to change. He became the enemy. They became the enemy. Everyone was the enemy. Just leave me alone and drink. And I would go back to the same vicious cycle. And my two kid brothers who idolized me now became afraid of me. And then my grandparents start to worry about me. And my extended family start to worry about me. See, I can never, ever get to a podium, thank the good Lord, and get to a podium and shout to a meeting, hey, all you have to do is not drink and go to meetings and you're a winner. Because that's arrogant and selfish. Let's ask the people who we stepped on the way into this sacred place if just not drinking's enough. It's great with not drinking, but what about the tornado roaring through the lives of others? What about the selfish and inconsiderate habits we gave to them based on our way of living? On self-will run riot, and we want to get to an AA meeting, some of them say, well, I didn't drink, so I'm a winner. That's good enough. You fix the mess. See, but we get here, and we get this message, and we take it where? To our homes, occupations, and affairs, if we're lucky enough to have a home. And I bless my family and those other family members who stood by us through that stuff. And at this moment, let me thank the Al-Anon members for the wonderful works and miracles you guys perform in your glorious fellowship. After a short time of behaving like this, I started to steal from my family. My dad would leave money around, my brothers would leave money around, and I would take it. You know, alcoholic arithmetic, if there's 50 bucks, 30 is half in my mind, right? So it's going with me. And I would do things like that, and little by slowly consequences started to happen. And my home became uneasy. You know what it's like living in an alcoholic home? Everyone's in fear, walking on thin ice. When's it going to happen? How are they going to come in? This is how it went. My family was suffering from full-blown alcoholism when God separated me from alcohol in 1988. My family was full-blown alcoholic, and they're not alcoholics. But they were suffering from this illness. In my book, it's really clear. Years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. My family had to experience that because of what owned me and now owning them, alcoholism. I found my dad's checkbook one morning, and I would get up in these mornings when Bill says, when a morning terror madness was on me, and I was just out of the starting gate. But I remember looking for money, something. I couldn't find anything, and I went to this dresser drawer and discovered my dad's checkbook. And what I did was I had to brainstorm, forge his name, go down to the local bodega, the deli, and cash and get some beer. And I did that, and they did it for me. I did this a few times. I hit the lottery in my mind, right? But I didn't know anything about checking statements, and he got these forged checks back to him. And back then, they used to send a whole check with the stamp on it, right? And he came looking for me. And I remember I was sitting in a car with a girl in Lower Manhattan, and he drove up, and he jumped out of the car and screamed my name, and I knew I was in serious trouble. My dad's presence has a way of, you know, doing that. And I told the girl in the car, hey, you deal with him, I'm leaving. And I was a man's man back then. So he called my name like two or three times, and I froze. And my dad's the type of guy, talk eyeball to eyeball with you. And if you move, you're lying, because he ain't. And, you know, being an alcoholic, I mean, when's the last time when you're drinking, you look someone in the eye? It's always, you know, like this. And I came up with a lot of tears, blamed her in the car, blamed the guys in that neighborhood, and my dad sent me to my first treatment center. And I went off and I did 28 days in my first treatment center. I had not conceded to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic. In fact, I didn't do that for my first few treatment centers. I went into treatment, my first few treatment centers, the same reason why I went into my first treatment center, because the heat was on. And I had to just follow rules here for a little bit to get the heat off, and then I can go back and control and regulate my drinking. I'll just find different spots to drink and different people to hang out with. So my first treatment center, I went in for that reason, no other reason, because my dad was furious with me and I wanted to get the heat off. And I went into treatment, and I did 28 days in treatment. And I did push-ups and sit-ups. I learned words like dysfunctional family and enablers and my triggers and my issues and acceptance, page 449. And all these nice things. And I had a girlfriend meet me at the door after 28 days and got loaded. And I went right back to the same vicious cycle again. And now I wasn't coming home anymore. And I remember my dad would say, just call me if you're not coming home. Just let me know where you are. He was settling for that. See, their standards of living drop as we drop. And what becomes matter of fact most times, if you were sane and sober, would say, oh, my God, what's going on? There's a great story in one of our books. And Bill comes home from this golf trip, passes out in front of 182 Clinton with a bleeding head. And it's sunrise. And Lois opens up the door, just picks him up, and takes him in. Not, oh, my God, what happened? And he says, we both sunk to an all-time low. It became matter of fact. And my dad was selling, just call if you're not coming home. I mention my dad a lot for this reason, because if it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that my Heavenly Father gave my dad to walk me through this, you would have a different speaker here tonight. Because in AA, I've heard for years that God works through people. It isn't only people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's people. It's people, the parent, a policeman, a coworker, whoever it may be. God will send that angel to connect the dots for us or walk us through some very, very dark nights. And for me, God put my dad in that position to be helpful to me. I couldn't see it until 1988. And I went off to my first treatment center, 28 days. I come out and I'm loaded. I'm right back in the same vicious cycle. And I made my second treatment center. I made my third treatment center. And by now I got bounced out of my home. I got a job as a longshoreman on the South Brooklyn waterfront. Anyone seen the movie On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando? That's where I was. It wasn't exactly the training ground for spiritual growth, if you get the idea. I worked with guys who were fed up with the day at sunrise, and there I am. And I worked there for a short time, but brought my illness with me. And my dad, who had this impeccable reputation, suddenly was experienced the hideous four horsemen. He was experiencing terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair, along with my family, not knowing Pete gets paid on Wednesday. Is he going to come back from lunch? You know, men would approach him on the job. Your son borrowed $100. I haven't seen him in 2 weeks. What's going on? I start to borrow money from people I shouldn't be in the same neighborhood with. And they weren't about talking. And my dad had to get me out of scrape after scrape after scrape. And he started to experience alcoholism, hoping for anything. Just give me something. Sleepless nights, and went on and on and on. And I lost this job that was basically impossible to lose. And I remember going into my fifth treatment center. Right before I went into my fifth treatment center, I went to live with my grandparents for a while. And I showed up at my grandmother's door after about a three-day drunk, filthy, and looking the part of a Bowery bum. And I was there for one reason, to steal her house. I was going to rob her house. When she wasn't looking, that's the condition I was in. And she had no part. She wanted no part of that. When I walked in, she let me in. I used the restroom, and then she said, "You need to go." She said, "I have no idea what you're bringing into this house anymore. You need to go, and I have other grandchildren I need to save." And I was so angry with her. The anger in me, I wouldn't verbalize it, but what was going on with me was hatred. How could she do this to me? My dad throws me out, now you throw me out. I didn't realize till I sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous how they both did that with broken hearts. That's what alcoholism does. Levels everything in our path. And I went to live on the streets for a while, and I was, you know, going from place to place to place. And when you're drinking in a bar and you're getting loaded, you know, she suddenly looks like Bo Derek as I got drunk. And I would come to the next morning, I look over, and she looked more like Bo Diddley, and I wonder how I got into that jam. I did it again. Everyone identifies me with that, right? I'm in the right place. It must have been the lights, you know. So I get this opportunity to go into my fifth treatment center, and before I got in there, my dad showed up again and got me this little apartment in Brooklyn, this little place. Had to go outside to change your mind, one of those little tiny little studios, but there I was, and I got the place. He furnished it for me, a bed and dressers and clock radio and all the things I would need. Put food in the refrigerator, put a bunch of money on a table for me, bought me work clothes, hoped to get my job back, bought me dress clothes. I mean, did all of this stuff for me, which I should have been doing on my own, right? I remember when he left, the first thing I did was unplug the color television and took it into the town and sold it. And the clock radio came out, and the phone came out, and the shoes and the boxes, they came out. And I brought, like, the Lower East Side into this little place before I got thrown out of there. And I got thrown out for obvious reasons, the condition of my life and not paying rent and doing a lot of ugly, earthy things in this place, inviting a lot of other people in there. And my landlord threw me out. And between moving in and getting thrown out, I spent time in a fifth treatment center. And I was up in this fifth treatment center for 9 weeks. And I always talk about this because it was so important for me in my life to really get what I was up against. I walked into treatment for the fifth time, and I'm up in this treatment center for 9 weeks, physically separated from alcohol for 9 weeks. I got out on a Saturday and was loaded on Monday because I still had the mind of an alcoholic. For me, the main problem centers in the mind, not the body. My body was separated from alcohol. My body had been detoxed. My body was no longer craving booze, but my mind had another agenda. See, and if the main problem centers in the mind, where's the solution? It's not in the mind. It's in the spiritual revolution. And through that, I'm given a new mind where my will is aligned with God and I get free, completely free, recovered from alcoholism. Back then it was different. My mind had another agenda. It didn't care how long I was away in treatment. It doesn't even care now how long I've been sober. So after 9 weeks, I get loaded. See, many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, we'll tell a newcomer, bring the body and the mind will follow. The last thing we need for any one of us is the mind showing up at any given day. Right? A guy or woman comes in, that 30th detox, bring the body, the mind will follow. No, keep the mind out there. Let's work on his or her spirit. Let's work with that. great commercial. Mine is a terrible thing to waste. For us, it's a great thing to lose and completely detach from. I did it, trying to fill up, feeling empty. I have this hole in the soul. I feel empty. And we reach out there, meet her, meet them, get the right job, right money to fill up, right? And we come back to me sharing, I can't believe what's going on in my life. I'm full of fear. I'm this. I'm that. I'm completely out of my mind. I say, no. If you were out of your mind, you'd be so well. It's that you're too in your mind. That's the problem. We need to be completely out of our minds to experience the glory of God. Because what the mind demands is logic. What the mind demands is to put God on a spreadsheet. What the mind demands is to understand and comprehend the power called God. And it can't. The spiritual way we live contradicts the mind. It's a contradiction to what my mind wants. My mind, as a real alcoholic, wants me dead, will settle for me drunk. And when I start talking to it about God, it needs, give me a little spreadsheet here, put it on a computer. Oh, there's God, there's you. I see. We meet at the end. It don't work that way. This power can only be experienced, and we can enhance that experience with the great works we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Out of my mind to experience the glory of God. I've had tremendous experiences with prayer meditation, specifically meditation. Tremendous experiences working with others. I've learned, don't let my mind in there. Don't try to interpret that. Watch a sunset and feel the power of God. Watch the sunrise, feel the power of God. Right away, the mind wants to get in and say, well, let's figure this out. You're feeling spiritual now, aren't you? Right? I'm no longer spiritual at that point. I'm intellectual. Right? Perceptions. By the way, a sunrise and sunset, I just found this out. When a sun is setting, it ain't moving. We're moving. When a sun is rising, it ain't rising. We're moving. So I always thought the sun was moving around. I'm from Brooklyn. What do I know? It's going to happen. Perceptions. So I offer that to people. Seek experience with this glory of God, with the glory of God. Seek experience with God. Don't try to understand it, because we'll intellectualize ourselves. What gets in the way so often is the way. We look at the direction and say, okay, well, if I meet on Palace of Rockwell, does that mean, we're already trying to intellectualize the whole thing. Just let the directions direct. Let the directions direct. Sign up, follow directions, and it will take you where it's supposed to take you. In chapter 2, Agnostics, it says, this book will enable you to find a power greater than yourself. This book will take me to that power. And I'm so grateful that I don't worship the big book. It is my life. I don't worship the steps. They are my life. Worship the power that stuff takes me to. And then I come back here and give it away. I came to get and I stay to give. So here I am. I get bounced out of this apartment after my fifth treatment center. And now I'm living on the streets. My dad locked doors. My kid brothers didn't want me around. My grandparents didn't want me around. Family didn't want me around. And I pretty much was one of these people who roamed through the streets. And really through a miracle, I got into a sixth treatment center. I stayed up there for a day and a half, and I signed myself out. The obsession to drink alcohol was that powerful. I could not deal with being cooped up in another treatment center, going through another detox again. And counselors pleaded with me. They said, Peter, don't leave. You're going to die. Don't do this. But my mind will pretty up a junkyard and take me back to that which is going to kill me over and over and over again. And I signed myself out and right back to the streets I went. And I almost did die. I have a mind that wants me dead, will settle for me drunk, and believe me, it'll show up sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called untreated alcoholism, and it's manifested in sprees. When alcoholism goes underground and resurfaces somewhere else, it resurfaces in the fear spree, it resurfaces in the food spree, it resurfaces in the money spree, the sex spree, the anger spree, something to cope with the current now, because right now I can't deal with, so I need to go somewhere. I think I'm running to get relief. I'm running away from where I currently am. That calls sprees. What's behind those eventually is another double Jack Daniels. Let's get it going again. It's called untreated alcoholism. What this work does, and one of the reasons why I sign up to go through the work over and over and over again, is continually remove self, kill self in order to get free. Let the manifestations of self slowly dissolve and then die. And the less self, the more God. The more God, the less self. So I go to the work and submit to that. And what I found out, it's not by gathering up that I experience God, but by complete removal of self that I experience God. It's removing, not addition. The more that gets removed from me, where I stand, if you will, in essence, with nothing, complete nothingness, is where I experience an abundance of this power called God. That's what this work does. And those are some of the drastic and revolutionary proposals that when we sign up is, okay, hey, would you be my sponsor? You're popular. I like you. Show me what to do. Okay, we're going to go through the big book. Oh, we got to do work too? A fourth step? Can I just call you up once a day? And no, that's being a nudge. You're going to do the work. Back home, we have meetings where, you know, a guy will get his 90-day pin, and the sponsor said, Joe works a great program. He calls me every day. And I'm thinking, Joe doesn't work a great program. Joe's just a nudge. The prospect doesn't need to be calling me every day. That's dependence upon the sponsor rather than dependence upon God. Let's get down to the book. Let's move him or her through the 12 steps. Let them have a relationship with God. And go work with others. So I signed myself out of this 6 treatment center, and I went to live on the streets because that was the only place that I could be. I was unemployable. Nothing else was out there. And I did a lot of earthy things, ugly things for the price of a drink. Why would my thinking mind allow me to take a look at the consequences of my behavior? Why would my thinking mind allow me to say, this is going to be really humiliating. You're going to get caught. You're going to go to jail. We shouldn't do this. Let's go get help. Because if I did that, I may get well. And my mind wants no part of that. And so I would go and do whatever I had to do for the price of a drink. Start getting arrested a lot. Start getting beat up a lot. And I remember being in the back of outside the Port Authority. I wound up outside the Port Authority in Midtown Manhattan. If you know that area, Port Authority is on the 8th Avenue side and 9th Avenue side, both ugly spots in town. 9th Avenue is even worse than 8th Avenue. And at the time, 1988, around 1988, was really seedy. I have no idea how I wound up there. Perhaps I came out of a blackout because I was experiencing them regularly. But there I was, and I had what a lot of us get is this moment of clarity where we're struck sober for a moment. A book refers to it as what at first seemed to be the flimsy reed proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God. I was struck sober. On the 9th Avenue side of the Port Authority, I hadn't seen my family for quite some time, and they came back to me thinking, my family. I had thought of my mom. I thought of my dad and my kid brothers. And what was made abundantly clear to me was the condition of my being at that moment, which was a spirit who was dying. And I hated me, and I hated everything, and then I hated God. And God got all of it. In that moment of clarity, I screamed every four-letter word I can think of at you did this to me. You took my mom, you took my family, you turned me into this. I wanted no part of God, and he got all of it. And what my Heavenly Father did was, not like a person where they locked doors and said, I've had enough of you, you've burned every bridge I put in front of you, but opened up his arms one more time and said, come to me. In infinite mercy. Because I don't know what happened to me after this experience on the 9th Avenue side of the Port Authority, but it was a short time later, I was in the back of that hallway. And at this time, I begged, if you're out there, please take me from this. And my Heavenly Father took one of his children in the back of a seedy, filthy hallway and said, come with me. I have other work for you to do now. This is over. This is done. That was made abundantly clear to me, even though those words weren't spoken like we speak. It was just something, an energy that I knew it was over. I had no idea I was going to wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous or another treatment center or certainly not be doing something like this. I just didn't want to die, and I knew it was done. And in that moment, what happens to a lot of us, even in AA, even when we're making meetings and it's honest and we get free by going through the work again, we go from a place called suffering where it's like that, it's honest, and we're trying to get around it, and no matter how much we try, we get further stuck in it, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. We're still trying to use us to get past us, and we suffer. The more resistance, the more suffering. In the back of a hallway, June 23rd, 1988, the resistance stopped. I knew I had no power. In our book, profound words, lack of power is my dilemma. How powerful is that? How true is that? I had no power, and I knew it. The resistance stopped, and I went from suffering to surrender. That's why I said at the opening, my life is one of surrender today, one of invitation. I didn't call up John and say, John, get me to speak, please. John was kind enough to say, hey, would you like to come down? My life is one of invitation. And in the back of that hallway, it was done. Surrender to the moment. Surrender to what is, and my circumstances were there. And it was no longer experienced relief, but it was the beginning of freedom in that. And I went out of my mind to here. Only God could move that. Only God could connect those dots that way. On my best day in here, with 19 years sober, I couldn't put the dots to connect the dots that way. I remember thinking in this moment, there's only one person I can call who I hadn't seen for quite some time, and that was my dad. The only guy on this planet who's going to come and get me in this condition is my dad. How do I do this? I had soiled clothes and boots, construction boots with holes in them. I don't know the last time I bathed, I looked like a Bowery bum, and I'm walking through the streets. I was about 40 or 50 pounds on the weight. I'm thinking, call my dad. Okay, I don't have any money. I'll call him, collect. And I was living in Brooklyn. He was living in Jersey. I would go to the pay phones, and I would go to call him, collect, and I was having these crying jacks. And I, tears, and I'd hang up the phone. Go to another public phone and try it again. The tears, hang up the phone. And somewhere around the third or fourth phone call, I said to myself, if my dad comes to get me and sees me in this condition, this will truly break his heart. To see his older son in the condition I was. If I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the condition I was in, and I don't give that lip service. That's where I was brought to in order to make me teachable today. Well, my dad wasn't home. He was down south in Atlantic City with his wife. And he was down there for a few days gambling and having some fun with his wife. And while he was gambling, he told me this story after my first AA birthday. That while he was gambling, he had something in here that said, Peter's in trouble, get back and get your son. And it was so powerful, he listened to it. He left Atlantic City, told his wife, we have to go look for my son. She thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for him, right? And he headed back to Brooklyn. And that's a good 3-hour, 4-hour drive. And he started running through the streets. Here's a gentleman who's my best friend in the whole world today. And back then, if he walked in the room, I looked for the exit sign. But here's a guy who would go in his car with my uncle with a photo of me to where I used to run through the streets and pay off the winos and the junkies. Here's $10. This is my son. Where is he? Here's 10 bucks. This is my son. Have you seen him? This is where they were brought to. And he started running through the streets, driving through the streets, looking for me this one day, and he found me. God connected the dots. And he was alone. And I remember this moment. He didn't jump out of the car like the first time when he was after me for stealing checks. His deportment shouted he was someone with an answer. And he called my name and walked with a gentle spirit across the street. This is what my God did for him in order to get me. God works through people. See, what I got real clear on looking back on this is that when I work with drunks, when I work with alcoholics, as those who have worked with me, because I happen to be the sponsor today, and you're coming to me and I'm the teacher, let me not look at you with a condescending attitude. Let me not talk down to you from a spiritual hilltop. But let me get right where you are and understand where you are. Remember where I was and walk you through that. Let me give you patience and tolerance and perhaps even compassion to get you free. Because that's what God did for my dad on that particular day, June 23rd, 1988, when I begged for help and here he was. And he walked across the street, and if he had a little bit more aggressive attitude, spirit, I would have probably taken off. And if he was a little bit more timid or more shy, I would have probably ran circles around it. But he met me where I was, God doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. And he walked across the street, and I remember telling him, Dad, I'm okay. And then I collapsed in his arms. This I remember very clear, and God has kept his memory for me very much alive, very green. And I collapsed in his arms. There was nothing left of me. He had every right at this moment to chase me away. But he was able to stand tall with dignity in the most sordid moment in both our lives. And I remember him putting his arm around me and patting me on the back, which I was very aware of, telling me, I'm not going to lose my son to this. not going to lose my son to this. It was the first time in my entire life I could remember that sort of affection. And I felt safe in that moment. My life was in shambles, and I felt safe in this. And off I went to my seventh and God willing last treatment center. And I spent 10 days in this place in Long Island, New York, and the insidious insanity of the first drink was galloping back. Bill says how it happened to him in a Mayflower hotel. The insidious insanity of the first drink. Alcoholism didn't care about any of this. Got to get this guy drunk again. And 10 days of being in this treatment center, I'm thinking, well, maybe I can do it a different way. And truly, through the grace of God, they sent me off to Minnesota. And then something happened. They presented me with the big book and the 12 principles in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I watched these people, not only in an AA meeting. I used to go to this Three Legacies meeting. It was about 300 people. I was scared to death. Everyone looked good. They had shirts and ties on. They didn't come to the podium dressed like they were going to go commit a felony, like in some of our meetings, right? They looked good. I identified with that. But then they invited me to the diner, or they invited me into their home, and I saw how they lived with their challenges. You know, life is problematic, the kids, the job, the this, the that. But they walked with that and through that with great dignity. My God, I wanted what you had to offer. How do you do this? And you look good doing it. I just left the toilet. Help me. And after about 10 months, I was brought home. And my dad was there to greet me. And my first appointed teacher showed up. And we began going through the work. And I remember I got my first apartment. I was living on a couch with my kid brother, and I got my first apartment. And I moved in there really through a prayer, but I had this little apartment, my first sober apartment. And my first night in the sober apartment, I slept in a sleeping bag. Someone in AA gave me a sleeping bag. That's all that was in there. But I got a couple of those AA bumper stickers. Right? And I had a something that represents my higher power, and I put it above the door. And I had a couple of AA bumper stickers. And I had a sleeping bag. And I was sober. And I slept with dignity that night. I had my own apartment. And I remember about a week went by, and there was a knock at the door, and it was my dad. And he showed up with, coffee set, you know, cups and saucers and all of that. You know. And a member of AA gave me a television. And a member of AA gave me one of these futons for a bed. And then I got back to work. And then I bought a bed. I remember I bought my first bed for my apartment. It was just, I discovered electricity. Yeah. I remember when I was on a drunk Sunday morning. Sundays were my worst days drinking, just the worst. I couldn't do what I had to do. Sundays were just downtime for everybody except me. And I used to see these people walking their dogs on Sunday morning, you know, sober and greeting the day with their dogs and a bag full of bagels and a Sunday newspaper. I hated them. How do you do that? I need a drink. Like now I'm getting really sick and you got bagels and a Sunday newspaper. But there was a part of me that wanted to do that. And when I moved into this apartment, I remember there was a bagel store right on the corner. They're all over Brooklyn, you know. So I go down there and I order a dozen bagels. I live alone. I order a dozen bagels. And the Sunday paper, and I walked out of that place like I hit lottery. I said, thank you, Father, I am free. How good is this? My family's been reassembled over these years. We've grown together, separate but together. And we have our challenges, and we don't always agree. But we move through this because of God with dignity. This tough guy tells me, I love you. My kid brothers and I share that with each other. Through all of this, God allows us all to stand with dignity. I pray to this power, have experience with this power, and wondered, does my Heavenly Father know me, Peter Marinelli? Does he really know me? Does he hear my heart when it's sad? Does he hear my heart when it's full of joy? Does he know me, Peter Marinelli? And I got moved to work with different practices in meditation. And one of them I'm getting moved to share with you now. When I first sobered up, I remember I was counting days, selfish and self-centered, right, to the root. And yet in this place, I get moved, and I didn't know what was going on, to go to my religious community, not to attend service, but just go to my religious community, walk in, and light two candles. One for my mom. Where is she? I know she's passed on. I miss this woman terribly. And one for the sick and suffering in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, counting days. And I would go once a week, twice a week, not give thought about it, light two candles, make prayer, out. Do it regularly. I'm doing this for about 8 or 9 years into AA. And I'm sitting in meditation one morning, and I have this experience that completely revolutionized my life, where I got God knew me, Peter Marinelli, and knew what I needed. And we say in AA, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Whether it's quick, whether it's slow, when God shows up, God shows up. And it's profound. It's life-changing. It's mood-altering. You know it. You can experience, whether you're driving in your car, working with a drunk, in a prayer meditation, it shows up. Something has changed. And it'll never be the same. And what we think is the truth until we find out it no longer is the truth, because we have a new experience with this power called God. And I'm in this meditation, always wondering. When I was in these drunken stupors, I would make these pleas to God. Hey, if you're out there, you SOB, can you please make my mom show up? Bring her down from the heavens. Let her show up. I just want to hold on to her. I want to hug her just one more time, and I will stop drinking. Please do that for me. Well, that never happened. I'm in this meditation. I'm sitting in this meditation. Suddenly, I move to this beach. I always felt safe by the ocean. I always felt safe by the beaches. And that's where God placed me, a safe place. And as I'm in this meditation, I'm watching what's happening. And where out on the horizon, where the sky meets the water, appears my God, my conception of my higher power. And he walked towards me. And as he got closer to me in this meditation, appears out of his chest my mom. And she walks towards me. And I turn into this little 8-year-old boy. A lot of earthy, a lot of ugly things happened to me at 8. Just horrible things. And so God let her meet me in a very tough spot in my life. I was this 8-year-old kid, and what she did was, she was weeping, but they were tears of joy, and I knew that. And she knelt down, and she held me. She gave me a hug. And then I stood up, and I was an adult again. I remember her holding me once again, and she pointed off, and this I'll never forget, she pointed off to the horizon. My higher power, my conception of a higher power, put his arm over my shoulder, and with no words spoken, but it's a movement that happens, he let me know she's okay, she's with me. And as I looked into my higher power's eyes, I cannot explain the amount of peace or bliss I experienced in love in that moment. Complete freedom. And she pointed off to the horizon on the left, and she pointed at these hundreds of lights, like a Manhattan skyline lit up at night. There were flickering lights, just hundreds of them. And she pointed off to the other side, and the same thing, hundreds of lights flickering. And she had these tears, she was weeping of joy, and she held on to me once more. And then her and my higher power walked away, they became one, and I came out of this meditation. And I was exhausted. And I was weeping. And I was confused. I didn't know what to make of this. And I called up my sponsor, the importance of having a sponsor who's awake. And I called him up, and I says, here's what just happened. What's with the lights? I don't get it. He says, Peter, haven't you been lighting candles for your mom now for about 9 years? I says, yeah. He says, she let you know she got them. That's what happened. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And at that moment, something changed within me where I was finally at peace where she was with the glory of God, experiencing that, and God answered my prayers. God heard my heart, as he does all of us. I've never looked at this power the same anymore. I've never looked at other people the same anymore, even when I get angry, because I go past the external and touch the Spirit. Pay attention to the Spirit that's in you, because it's in me. And that's what puts us together. That's what gives me these great experiences, the glory of God. He heard me. My prayers were answered. Never looked at this power the same. But we want to get to AA and say, just put the plug in a jug. Do you see how that falls short? You see the greatness that happens with people like us? My greatest spiritual teachers have been, and I sought out many, my greatest teachers have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous, drunks, who've gotten recovered, experienced God, and stood on the firing line and said, here, this is for you. My greatest spiritual teachers have been people like us. Let's shout that from the rooftops about what goes on in this glorious fellowship. My life has never been the same. I get to do this a lot. I tend to attract relapses. My sponsor says it's penance for your last life. And they all tell me, keep getting drunk, I keep getting drunk, I keep getting drunk. And I ask them questions and I press them. What was going on? By the time we got done, they all said the same thing, that the relationship between them and God stopped. And for people like us, we're left to us, which means we get drunk and we die. With God, we get power, we get free. Let's talk about that at our meetings. My family, as I said, has been reassembled. I hope to always be a part of this miraculous fellowship, to be teachable and give this away with the same love and gratitude that you freely give it to me each and every day. That's all I got. Peace.